We are preparing aggressively for the fall. I am sorry to say, I think it's going to be a difficult fall and winter, and hence the reason we're putting these policies in play.
Good evening. That sobering message is the motivation. New measures that will have a ripple effect on people right across the province.
Ontario's top doctor says we're making progress in our fight against COVID-19, just not quick enough. And so the government is choosing to pause any further reopening for the time being. Updated mandatory vaccination policies will also take effect in some sectors, including health and education. Pfizer shots will soon be available for anyone born in the year 2009, and third doses will be offered to those in select populations.
There's a lot to get to tonight, and our team is covering it all. CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello is tracking the new vaccination policies and who will be affected. Natalie Johnson is following the impact on schools, specifically the students now eligible for a vaccine. And Zoraida Allman is looking at booster shots and whether this move by the province is a sign of things to come. Let's begin with Colin DeMello.
Nathan, the province seems to be increasingly concerned about the rise of the fourth wave, which is why these measures, they say, are necessary to blunt the spread. Vaccinations will not be mandatory for those who work in healthcare or education, but the province says thousands of employees on the public payroll will have to prove their vaccination status, or they'd have to take mandatory COVID-19 tests regularly. There seems to be a perfect storm brewing in Ontario. Vaccination rates have stalled just as cases and hospitalizations are rising, leading to a new strategy from the provincial government.
We must take assertive action to protect the health of and safety of all Ontarians, especially as we move closer to a return to school and the cooler weather drives us indoors.
The sweeping changes will affect thousands of public employees across the province, including those in hospitals, home and community care, ambulance services, licensed child care, public school boards, post-secondary institutions, retirement homes, and congregate care settings. The Chief Medical Officer of Health is directing those employers to implement vaccination policies by September 7th, requiring all staff to provide proof of full vaccination status or a medical vaccination exemption. Anyone who chooses to remain unvaccinated will have to submit to rapid COVID-19 testing right as they arrive at work.
The frequency of the testing will be following the risk in the community in which the individual lives or works. At a minimum, it would be once a week. It would escalate to up to twice or three times a week, depending on how Delta is spreading in the community.
The policies were approved by Premier Doug Ford during a cabinet meeting last night after intense pressure from the medical community. Today, however, the Premier was absent, leaving it to the Chief Medical Officer of Health to announce the new measures, which were immediately criticized by the opposition as a half measure.
It's not mandatory vaccines that he announced today. So I just want to be very, very clear. No unvaccinated person should be providing health care to our most vulnerable. No unvaccinated person should be in a classroom with our kids.
At the same time, there are calls for Ontario politicians to walk the talk, to lead by example and get vaccinated themselves. The Ontario Liberals are calling for mandatory vaccinations here at Queen's Park, with consequences for those who choose not to.
If an MPP has not received both doses of the vaccine and does not have a human rights code accommodation, I would suggest to you that that member shouldn't be permitted into the chamber, into the legislature.
Sensitivities are heightened heading into the fall, especially because the province's top doctor is offering a troubling prediction.
I am sorry to say, I think it's going to be a difficult fall and winter, and hence the reason we're putting these policies in play to best protect our communities.
Policies that he hopes will avoid a fourth provincial lockdown. So how many employees are yet to be vaccinated? The province says it does not know. They never asked for profession when you received your vaccine, so they're largely relying on surveys and anecdotal information, according to the Chief Medical Officer of Health, to make up those estimates. As well, who's paying for these tests for the unvaccinated? The province says the rapid antigen tests are actually paid for by the federal government. But if you test positive and they need a secondary PCR test to confirm the first test, well, that's paid for by Ontario taxpayers. Reporting live at Queen's Park, I'm Colin DeMello. Nathan, over to you.
All right, thank you, Colin. Next to the big development for thousands of Ontario students who, until now, have been unable to get a vaccine.
Starting tomorrow, anyone turning 12 by the end of this year will be allowed to book their shot. CTV's Natalie Johnson is live with more on this. Natalie.
Hi, Michelle. Well, until now, Ontario vaccine clinics like this one have only been able to give the shot to kids once they have had their 12th birthday. But the province now says that in an effort to immunize more students sooner, anyone turning 12 this calendar year will be eligible for a COVID-19 vaccine.
11-year-old Adam Villani is headed back to school in September and thinks it's good news that kids who are soon turning 12 will become eligible to receive the COVID-19 vaccine.
It's actually good to be allowing younger kids to get it because then that provides more protection against COVID.
The province announced today it is expanding eligibility for the Pfizer vaccine to children born in 2009, who turned 12 this year. Previously, the vaccine could only be given to children who had already turned 12, meaning thousands of Ontario students headed into grade 7 with birthdays late in the year would not have had access to it before the start of school.
There's no difference between a child that's 11 and 8 months and a child that's 12. And if you didn't vaccinate them, then just by the nature of their age, the date of birth, they are not allowed to get vaccinated. That means that if there's an outbreak in school, that they have to take time off school.
Such a relief. We're going tomorrow.
Amanda Akhtimichuk's daughter Fiona turns 12 in November. They are both relieved she'll have access to the vaccine for protection at school.
You know, we just don't know with this unpredictable virus, like, what are we going to be exposing our children to in September? So it's just like a peace of mind thing for us as we send her back out into the world, essentially.
Both British Columbia and Alberta have already made the vaccine available to children born in 2009.
And Ontario officials say they have been monitoring the vaccine rollout to 11-year-olds in British Columbia and Alberta over the last number of months, saying there have been no health risks identified. Reporting live in Scarborough, I'm Natalie Johnson. Nathan, over to you.
All right, thank you, Natalie. Ontario is seeing a drop in the number of new COVID-19 cases after 5 days above the 500 mark. Public Health Ontario is logging 348 new cases today. 203 of those are in unvaccinated people, with 49 partially vaccinated, and 79 in people considered fully vaccinated.
280 more cases are now considered resolved, raising that total to more than 543,000 over the course of the pandemic. 10 additional deaths are linked to the virus. The Ministry of Health says 6 of those deaths occurred 2 months ago and are now being included as part of a data catch-up. 9,428 lives have been lost to COVID-19 in Ontario.
Today's regional breakdown includes 85 new cases in the city of Toronto, with 45 in Peel Region and 34 in Hamilton. York Region has 32 new cases, with 21 in Halton, 19 in Durham, and 14 in Niagara Region. For the first time, the province is sharing its plans for third doses of the vaccine.
And who will be a priority for a booster as Ontario looks to fend off the spread of the Delta variant? CTV's Zoraida Allman joins us in the studio with more on that. Zoraida.
Michelle and Nathan, oftentimes transplant patients don't respond as well to the standard two-dose vaccine regimen. Well, today the government announced those with compromised immune systems are now eligible for a third vaccine dose. And while that is welcome news, actually getting that third shot is already proving to be a challenge, as one viewer shared with us this afternoon.
They are the people at most risk of serious illness without a robust immune system to fight off a virus like COVID-19. Today, the province announced they will be offering a third dose of the COVID-19 vaccine to these most vulnerable Ontarians.
This includes those that are transplant recipients, individuals receiving treatment with an anti-CD20 agent, patients with hematological or blood cancers who are on active treatment, and a third dose can provide an improved immune response for these individuals. But it's very focused and narrow in the eligibility criteria.
Third doses will also be offered to residents in long-term care homes and Indigenous elder care lodges.
I was told I have next to no antibodies.
Lisa Hune is eager to get her third dose. She had a kidney transplant 24 years ago, her second dose of the COVID vaccine at the end of April. Upon hearing the announcement, she went to a mass vaccination clinic in Scarborough this afternoon, only to be told,
he said, nope, there's nothing we can do. We don't have a process in place. I said, well, in the transplant community, this has been out there and we've been waiting for this day for many weeks.
And now it appears she will have to wait longer. For how much longer, she doesn't know.
There's not even a direction as to, okay, maybe it's not available today, but it'll be available tomorrow, 2 days, 3 days. It's a guessing game.
And she has some advice for the provincial government.
So when you're going to make an announcement of any sort, you should have the process in place of what that announcement is going to entail.
A vaccination process that transplant recipients like Lisa need in order to be protected.
Now, health officials in the U.S. authorized a third vaccine dose for high-risk people last week. It's expected they will recommend boosters for all Americans 8 months after their second dose. That announcement could come as early as this week. As for Lisa, she says she doesn't know what she's going to do. Likely her next step will be calling her doctors. I'm Zoraida Allman. Nathan, back to you.
All right, thank you, Zoraida. Across the province, more than 40,000 vaccine doses were administered yesterday, pushing Ontario's total to more than 20.2 million since the start of the rollout. More than 11,000 of those shots were first doses, meaning more than 10.6 million in Ontario are at least partially vaccinated. And more than 29,000 of yesterday's shots were second doses, raising that figure to more than 9.6 million.
It's not just the province updating its vaccine policies today. If you're planning on attending any major sporting events in the city, prepare to provide proof of protection. Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment has announced all staff and spectators will need to be fully vaccinated to attend any of its arenas, stadiums, or restaurants. That policy is expected to take effect next month. MLSC venues include Scotiabank Arena, home to the Raptors and Leafs, as well as BMO Field. And our online team is staying on top of all of today's developments with Ontario's pandemic response. You can find their continuing coverage at ctvnewstoronto.ca.
Also tonight, escaping Afghanistan, but his family left behind. The desperate attempts one man is now facing as he tries to safely bring his loved ones to Canada, fearing time is running out.
Some good news to share with you tonight. A missing 12-year-old girl has been found safe. There had been a massive search for the young girl who disappeared early yesterday morning in the East End. She has autism and police say functions with the mind of an 8-year-old. The girl was spotted by two people under a bridge in the Woodbine and O'Connor area. She is in good health and told police she was hungry.
Right, a hot day, but some clouds as well. Michelle, how are things looking tonight?
Well, we are looking at continued humidity and continued cloud cover, Nathan. Of course, we've got lots of humidity stretching out through the rest of the week. Still some instability in the atmosphere. We escaped the brunt of this in Toronto, but we do have some scattered showers and storms, especially to the north if you're over Shelburne, Alliston, extending up towards the Barrie area. A lot of moisture to the south associated with the remnants of Tropical Depression Fred. But as that seems to be veering off more to the northeast, it seems we'll be spared most of what that entails, and that's a lot of moisture and instability as we get into tomorrow. As we look at our current temperatures and humidex values, we're sitting for the most part in the mid to upper 20s and feeling into the 30s. We reached a high of 27 degrees today, not too far off where we should be at 25. It's going to be quite warm in the overnight though, with a low of 21 degrees getting into the evening and the overnight feeling like 29, and again sitting in the upper 20s right now. Looks like it'll be mostly cloudy tonight, but I'll tell you what's in store for tomorrow coming up.
Thank you, Michelle. Still ahead, preparing for a Queen Street closure that will take years to complete. Why officials are promising the daunting downtown detour will be worth it eventually. International skepticism is high following the Taliban's declaration of an amnesty across Afghanistan.
During a television appearance today, a Taliban official urged women to join their government, suggesting they don't want women to be victims.
Women are a key part of society, and we are guaranteeing all their rights within the limits of Islam.
They've also made promises in recent days that girls can continue going to school, a deep departure from their brutal rule in the late 1990s. Many observers, including the United Nations, remain unconvinced.
The Taliban have made a number of statements that on the surface are reassuring, but as I said, actions speak deeper than words, and it's very early now, it's very fluid. It's very hard to say what is happening exactly.
For its part, the U.S. State Department says it has no choice but to take the Taliban at their word that they will not seek revenge against their citizens and will uphold basic rights. A spokesperson says the Taliban's actions over the coming days and weeks will determine whether they're telling the truth. The uncertainty overseas is being felt right here in the GTA. For loved ones of those still in Afghanistan, there's a growing sense of desperation.
Appeals for any assistance in getting family members to Canada and fast. CTV's Beth McDonnell is live with more. Beth.
Michelle, I'm standing near where planes have been landing, bringing Afghans and Canadian citizens fleeing the situation in Afghanistan. We know at least 800 people have come so far, but there are still so many families very anxious to bring their loved ones here to Canada, including families right here in the GTA.
I would have dreams of bombs. I have dreams of what's going to happen. I have dreams that, I cannot even explain.
Increasingly tormented with worry and guilt as the Taliban seized power, this Toronto man is desperate to bring his family to Canada. CTV News has agreed to protect his identity because he fears for the safety of his wife, daughter, parents and siblings hiding in Afghanistan.
I live in Canada and I am safe, and they are suffering the consequences of my employment and my job.
He's concerned a connection could be made to his years of administrative work, first with Western police forces training Afghan police, including time with the RCMP and Toronto police, and later the U.S. government. Lately, communication with his family is intermittent, and they're on the move.
What is the danger?
It could be from a person at Taliban militia just get and stop them, or somebody report them. It is just, in the limbo situation. That's what, anything could happen to them, anything. And I'm trying to navigate what is the best option to get them out of that situation. And I don't know. Believe me, I don't.
A refugee, he says he applied for his wife to join him 18 months ago. But since the U.S. announced military withdrawal, he's been sending emails begging federal politicians for help with no concrete answers.
This is a very tragic and traumatic situation.
This Toronto Afghan Canadian lawyer says he and his colleagues are receiving hundreds of similar calls from families. Canada has promised to accept 20,000 Afghans, but he says Ottawa needs to come up with a solution fast. With the Taliban in Kabul, many, even with the right papers, can't get to the airport.
We have to think outside the box, and we have to have some kind of avenue that assists these people today, not, in 6 months, not after the election, and not, in years. Because the processes that are announced for the 20,000, in my experience as an immigration refugee lawyer, take years.
Still have respect for Canada. It has shown always compassion for people that it need. And they announced that they will help people in need, vulnerable Afghan peoples. And what I saying that I know situation escalated too quickly, but every second count.
Meanwhile, the man says he feels helpless and is trying to stay hopeful. The Immigration Minister's office tells me the Canadian Armed Forces will be sending additional flights. As for the man's case, the office tells me it is looking into it, but it's taking longer than usual to get updates because of the situation in Afghanistan. Reporting live near Pearson, I'm Beth McDonnell. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Beth. And another flight with Afghans and Canadian citizens on board landed at Pearson just after 5 p.m. CTV News confirmed with the Immigration Minister's office. The charter flight arrived from Cologne via Reykjavik. That's not the right visuals, just to let you know. For their part, the leaders of Canada's main political parties do agree they will not recognize the Taliban as the legitimate government of Afghanistan.
But a wedge issue is forming on the campaign trail, the debate over mandatory vaccinations. CTV's Kevin Gallagher reports.
Are you here to unmask our children?
As Justin Trudeau campaigned in a Toronto suburb, anti-mask protesters confronted the Liberal leader, upset over his mandatory vaccination order for federal workers and domestic travel.
Canadians need to keep getting vaccinated. We're leading the world on vaccinations, but we need to keep it up. That's the message that I'm going to keep putting out there every single day.
Aaron O'Toole encourages vaccination, but doesn't want it forced on federal workers. Instead, the conservative leader wants those who refuse the shot to be subject to testing and screening, a policy on the federal government's website until it was taken down yesterday.
Mr. Trudeau needs to come clean with whether the plan that was on the website before he covered it up is actually their plan. We need to use vaccines. They're critical. But in some cases where we can use daily rapid testing, masking and all other measures.
In a statement, the Treasury Board says the language in the message posted late Friday afternoon was inaccurate, and the message has been taken down to avoid confusion.
We appreciate it.
At a BC factory that made PPE during the pandemic, NDP leader Jagmeet Singh says those who refuse vaccines could be fired, and the Liberals need to move up the deadline.
The reason why we set the deadline for Labor Day is because we are really thinking about kids. Children under 12 cannot get vaccinated.
In her Toronto riding, Green Party leader Anna-Mae Paul says between personal choice and health reasons, some Canadians were never going to be vaccinated, and the government needed a plan.
We should never turn a public health issue into a political football, and I think it is very disappointing to see that Mr. Trudeau has done that.
It's not just a federal election issue. Ontario is also mandating vaccinations for doctors, teachers, and other high-risk professions. Even some businesses will require proof of immunization. Kevin Gallagher, CTV News, Ottawa.
And for the latest on the election campaign, our election site is now live at election.ctvnews.ca. That is where you'll find exclusive Nanos tracking and fact checks on the party promises.
Humanitarian aid is flowing into Haiti after the country was struck by a powerful 7.2 magnitude earthquake on Saturday. The U.S. Coast Guard sent crew members to assist with relief. They're moving injured residents from the impacted areas to the capital. The Coast Guard is also working to transport medical personnel from Port-au-Prince to the quake zone by helicopter. The death toll from the quake has now climbed past the 1,400 mark.
Meanwhile, Haiti now facing even more devastation with the arrival of Tropical Storm Grace. The depression regained storm status overnight. Heavy rain and strong winds whipped the area hit hardest by Saturday's quake. Makeshift camps of those who lost their homes in the quake were also affected, leaving many with nowhere to go. CTV's Omar Sachedina has the latest from Port-au-Prince.
As you can see, the weather is much clearer than it was yesterday after Tropical Depression Grace pounded and drenched Haiti. And we still don't know the full impact of that. You know, there were threats of landslides and flooding, and that is on top of an already complicated search and rescue effort. We know that the United Nations has been trying to negotiate access to the epicenter in terms of bringing food and supplies. The main road that leads to the hardest hit areas is controlled by gangs, and so it's very difficult and dangerous to be able to bring supplies into that region. We know that the hospitals have a basic lack of supplies. They're overrun in some cases. We know that people are sleeping outside in soccer fields, and this is on top of everything else that this country has suffered in the last little while. The assassination of the president, Jovenel Moïse, the COVID pandemic. There are still few vaccines in this country, 500,000 doses in a country of 11 million people. Haiti is one of the poorest countries in the Western Hemisphere. In the best of times, resources are very difficult to come by, and now add this, and you can imagine how complicated the situation becomes. The death toll has now soared past 1,400, and there's still an unknown number of missing. Omar Sachedina, CTV News, Port-au-Prince.
Back here at home, drivers in the downtown core are used to delays and detours, but this one will last years.
A busy stretch of Queen Street set to be snarled for nearly half a decade. CTV's John Musselman is live downtown with more. John.
Well, Nathan, it'll happen on Queen Street right behind me, right over to Victoria. And when people hear this news, they're a bit startled, quite frankly, hearing how long it will take. But they also understand it will help to improve the transit system. Traffic on Queen Street near Bay Street is already congested. New streetcar tracks going in near City Hall is causing delays and diversions, and it will only get much worse in the years ahead.
It's not going to be good for the short term. It'll be good for the long term.
Metrolink says a section of Queen between Bay and Victoria will need to be closed to traffic and transit vehicles to facilitate the construction of the new subway station for the Ontario Line.
The proposed closure is scheduled to start in 2023, and it will run through until 2027.
This is a particularly important station in a really already developed area. So it requires a lengthy time in order for us to really get the work done.
The new subway station will be located underneath Queen Station, and it will provide connections to the existing Line 1 subway and TTC surface routes. All streetcars will be diverted off Queen Street from east of Bay to Yonge Street and from Yonge Street to Victoria Street. Pedestrian traffic will stay open to area businesses. Still, the news is not going over well with business owners on Queen Street.
It's going to impact us definitely. If it's for four years, it's definitely going to, because we're just coming out of this pandemic, hopefully.
People living and working downtown say they are not looking forward to the noise or the mess.
Oh my God, I guess it might be worth it, but the havoc and the inconvenience is going to be incredibly hard to put up with.
Wow, that's a long time. I don't think that's a doable thing.
We're hopeful that we're going to have enough contingency plans in place to make it as painless as possible.
Metrolink says the proposed closure and detour plan will go before City Council for approval in November. And Metrolink says it will hold a virtual town hall in the weeks ahead to provide more details about what will happen on this stretch of Queen Street. Reporting live, I'm John Musselman. I'll send it back to you.
Thanks, John. When you think of a library, do you think viral video? If not, think again. 1.5 million views and growing. The Whitby Library's TikTok account is on fire. That's coming up.
And I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, millions of Canadians didn't travel last winter due to the pandemic, including Canada's snowbirds. But now many who winter down south are getting anxious to go this fall, and they have concerns about the border, vaccines, and travel insurance. I'll have my reports. That's just ahead.
The Atlantic hurricane season has gotten quite busy in the last little while. We currently have three named storms: Tropical Depression Fred, which has now been downgraded. We have Grace as a tropical storm, and Henri. The biggest threat to land at this point is still Grace, which has affected Haiti, and there are tropical storm warnings in effect for parts of Jamaica right now. And also, we are looking at tropical storm hurricane watches for the Cayman Islands and also hurricane warnings for the Yucatan Peninsula. We'll continue to track this storm, and I'm also going to let you know how one of these storms will affect your forecast, and I'm going to have that coming up very soon.
About 1 million Canadian snowbirds spend the winter months in the southern U.S. each year, but last year, because of the pandemic, about 70% of them stayed home.
As more people get vaccinated and travel restrictions are lifted, about 90% of those snowbirds are hoping to go south this winter. Pat Foran has the story on Consumer Alert. Pat.
Thanks, Michelle and Nathan. Many Canadian snowbirds have been away from their properties for more than a year, and they're anxious to get down south. They're concerned when the land border will open, when vaccination passports might be ready, and then the kind of travel insurance they'll need. The land border to the U.S. remains closed, and while it's likely it will be reopened soon, it's added stress for snowbirds who travel south. About 70% of them drive, so they'll have their vehicles during their stay. While only 30% of snowbirds went south last winter, most are expected to go this year.
They want to check out their properties that they may own in Florida or Arizona. So obviously now, you know, we're anticipating upwards of 90% of snowbirds that do have properties in the U.S., they will end up making the trip down south this year.
Many are also waiting to see exactly what the policy will be when it comes to vaccinations, vaccination passports, and crossing the border.
The question remains, if the Biden administration does make that a necessity, a requirement for entry, what's going to happen to the individuals that have AstraZeneca or that have mixed doses of the mRNA vaccines?
When it comes to travel health insurance, there can be huge differences in coverage depending on the policy.
Some will provide protection that will differ based on whether you're vaccinated or not. Some will have higher limits if you're vaccinated versus not. Some might charge an extra premium if you're not vaccinated to account for the higher risk.
The type of vaccinations you have should not be a factor when getting insurance.
So if you've got a different vaccine, first dose versus second dose, won't impact your insurance coverage. The key there is what will happen at destination.
The Snowbird Association says what's most important is knowing how much COVID coverage you have, as each policy differs.
Even though the policy might have an overall benefit of, you know, maybe $1 million or $5 million, they're capping anything COVID-19 related to maybe $100,000 or $200,000.
The association advises snowbirds to only take a policy that provides at least $1 million in COVID-related coverages.
And most snowbirds travel south starting in November. The other huge migration is after New Year's Day. There's still lots of time for planning. And like most things related to the pandemic, issues can change on a day-to-day basis. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
It's a steamy evening, feeling like in the 30s right now. That's the place to be right now.
Yeah, no question, especially with all the humidity, Michelle.
Yeah, absolutely. A hot and humid day, and hot and humid as we get later into the week as well. We've had all the ingredients there, the instability to see showers and storms today, and they've sort of been more to the north or to the southwest of the city of Toronto. But all in all, we have escaped them here. Weather is brought to you by Train for home comfort, cooling, and clean air. It's hard to stop a train. So in terms of our forecast and where we're going to hold on to this humidity, but a little less instability as we get later into the week. We will see a fair bit of sunshine. It was a lot of cloud cover today. And again, we are still a little bit unsettled. We're seeing some scattered showers and possibly some isolated cells. Orangeville over towards Newmarket for Lake Simcoe. And it's certainly earlier today down around the Simcoe area, Long Point, Turkey Point, and over towards Hamilton. But Toronto, for the most part, as I mentioned, escaped the brunt of it. One big weather maker we talked about earlier about the tropical storms that we have in effect, the remnants of Fred, tropical depression Fred, are headed this way. However, they're veering off to the northwest of us. So for the most part, we're not really going to feel the effects. However, it's helping to usher in a lot of hot, humid air from the south. And as it does, that helps to feed the instability we have. We've had this stationary boundary in place as well. There's the remnants of Fred. And that's helped to keep us overcast. I'm going to put our forecast radar in motion so you can see how things play out. As we get into tonight, we could see some showers and storms around the GTA. Not an absolute washout by any means, up towards the Barrie area. And then tomorrow, we have some cloud cover. You see further to the south how much moisture will happen. So if you're in the Niagara region, this could definitely be you, or Kingston over around Prince Edward County, extending towards Ottawa. But Toronto, for the most part, will not see too much of this. We could see some showers and storms as we get into midday and then overnight. Overnight tonight, for example, though, we are seeing quite warm conditions. 21 degrees, feeling like 29 as we head into the overnight. It should be 16 this time of the year, so not a lot of reprieve from the heat. And as we get into tomorrow, we're seeing about 28 degrees tomorrow, feeling into the mid-30s with the humidity. And that humidity is going to carry through the week. But as you see, by the time we get later in the week, lots of sunshine, a little bit of shower activity for Sunday. But all in all, a good forecast on the way. Nathan? And that's all for now. Join us after the break. We'll have more to come.
It ripped through a buried neighborhood, leaving a 5-kilometer path of destruction in its wake.
A month later, those who lived through the EF2 tornado are still looking for answers. CTV's Mike Walker reports.
So this is the living room window.
Back in his home for 2 weeks now, Christian Anderson is still waiting to hear from his insurance company on when he can start rebuilding.
The insurance companies, I know they're busy. It's been a month, not a lot of answers.
A frustrating and lengthy process, he says, has left his young family in limbo, not sure what damage caused by the tornado will be covered, including a hole in the roof and a leak in the dining room ceiling.
Any time that the insurance people came over, they're like, well, no, I don't think this is from the storm. And it's kind of degrading. You have to defend yourself.
Other residents allowed back in their homes also desperately waiting for answers.
They're sending someone to reestimate the property. Now they're coming back the third time. Or is this a game?
Robert DeVillis needs a new roof and windows and is running out of patience.
At least to cover up my roof, because I don't want any further damage inside.
It's been more than a month since an EF2 tornado rolled through the South Barrie neighborhood, causing damage to more than 100 homes. Some houses beyond repair are now being torn down, while restoration crews continue to work around the clock.
It'll take me at least a couple more weeks, because we got to move all the contents out.
than to do more demo.
While many homeowners still wait on insurance companies, the city will be calling on the province to amend the Ontario Building Code to include hurricane straps on all new builds. The motion was tabled by Councillor Natalie Harris, whose home was destroyed.
Something I think in the future will save lives. This time we were just so lucky that no one lost their lives.
And hurricane straps offer a very inexpensive way to keep a roof on a home in up to an EF2 tornado.
Glenn McGilvray is with the Institute for Catastrophic Loss, which will be partnering with the city on drafting the proposal. His team surveyed the damage in the days after the tornado.
I think 20 homes lost the roofs in this event. And so, you know, very confident in saying that we could have kept the roofs on all these homes.
As for residents, there is still a lot of uncertainty.
The weather is going to turn here in Barrie. You know, and we still don't have a roof.
Some homeowners say they've been told the repairs could take up to a year. Tomorrow, the Insurance Bureau of Canada is expected to release a preliminary estimate on how much damage the tornado caused. Mike Walker, CTV News, Barrie.
The weekend is celebrating another big accomplishment. Blinding Lights is now the longest running song in Billboard Hot 100 singles chart history. It's been there for 88 weeks. The Scarborough Natives hit 2019 song had already set records for time spent on the Hot 100's top 5, top 10, top 20, and top 40.
We must take assertive action to protect the health of and safety of all Ontarians, especially as we move closer to a return to school and the cooler weather drives us indoors.
Updating our top stories, people who work or volunteer in high-risk settings will soon need to provide proof of vaccination as part of a significant change in the province's vaccine policy. Hospitals, public schools, home and community care facilities are included in today's announcement. Anyone who chooses to remain unvaccinated will have to complete rapid COVID-19 testing.
It's actually good to be allowing younger kids to get it because then that provides more protection against COVID.
Also part of today's provincial announcement, any child born in 2009 will be able to receive their Pfizer shot starting tomorrow. That means kids who are turning 12 this year no longer have to wait until their actual birthday to get their first dose.
I live in Canada and I'm safe in the are suffering the consequences of my employment.
And the calls for help from the Canadian government are growing by the day. This refugee here in Toronto worked with Western forces before fleeing Afghanistan. He applied for his wife to join him 18 months ago and is still waiting for any concrete answers on her status or approval. And remember to follow us on social media and keep up to date day and night through our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca. And if you have a news tip, photos, or video breaking news, let us know. On the markets, the Canadian dollar slipped 33 basis points to end the day at 79.23 U.S. American benchmark oil was down to 66.59 cents a barrel. And the TSX Composite Index was down to close at 20,363. He's won more Olympic medals than any other Canadian in track and field history, and he's the reigning 200-meter Olympic gold medal champion. He joins us now, Andre DeGrasse. Andre, congratulations first off on all your success. You would think the track season is over, but you have another race coming up soon. Is that right?
Yes. I have a race this Saturday in Eugene, Oregon. So just trying to prepare and get ready for that.
No rest. So there's a lot of talk about supporting and seeing our Canadian Olympians compete on Canadian soil. Will there be a time when we can watch you race in Toronto more often, you think?
Yeah, I think so. We'll see. I mean, I know they're trying to do some bids for certain games. Last time I got a chance to compete at the Pan American Games in 2015. So I'm hoping for more chances of that. But I know we have the Canadian National Trial Championship for Worlds next year in BC. So I look forward to, running there.
Yeah, I remember you running in the Pan Am and, of course, winning gold there. When it comes to sponsorships, I mean, how much has your Olympic success of late helped your career?
Oh, yeah, it's helped a lot. I mean, it's great to have, sponsors backing me. And, of course, a lot of that's a lot of support for me to accomplish my dream. And then, of course, you know, just having my family and my friends always there to support me and motivate me and keep me going. So all those people play a role in my career. And it's definitely great to, you know, have them in my corner every step of the way.
You know, what amazes many people is how calm you seem to be before these big races. How do you keep your nerves in check?
I think I just try to go out there and have fun. Just have fun. Don't worry about, you know, what's what. I mean, just go out there and just enjoy and embrace myself and embrace the moment, embrace the journey. So for me, I just try to go out there and just think of that every step of the way. So for me, it's just, I know I've done all the work. I'm physically fit. So now it's really just all about executing my race and being mentally prepared. So I just try to go out there and not take it too seriously and just smile and have fun with it. So that kind of just keeps my nerves in check and, you know, lets me have fun and let loose.
Well, obviously it's working. You're also part of a campaign to help small businesses that were hit hard by the pandemic. What are you doing there?
Yeah, so I teamed up with GoDaddy for this Being Unstoppable campaign to support and celebrate small business owners and entrepreneurs. Like you said, you know, this last year and a half has been crazy. So it's really just good to just have to have our support throughout this whole journey, because I feel like they are the backbone of our community and they have taken the biggest hit. So it's really just good for me to team up with GoDaddy to help provide them with the marketing tools and help them have all the necessary tools to, you know, run their business and keep their business up and going. So I'm really just proud to team up with them. So that the people actually in the commercial that I did it with, Lisa, John, and Stephanie, they're actually real life GoDaddy customers. So it was good to just hear their story and hear about their journey throughout this whole time. And, you know, I'm just looking forward to more opportunities of teaming up again with GoDaddy.
All right. Olympian Andre DeGrasse, thanks so much for your time and continued success.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Finally tonight, some local librarians are basking in the glow of internet success.
And they're hoping it will translate into people reading more than just their social media feeds. CTV's Andrea Case reports.
The longer I work in the library, the more I come to realize that James Patterson has written everything. Everything?
In a place traditionally known for being quiet, the Whitby Library is making a lot of noise. Library employees Jess Bellows and Aaron Wilson had an idea to get Gen Z and millennials who already use the library to come into the building.
So in a lot of ways, it's run like a business.
Yeah.
Just without any monetary value, right?
Yeah.
So you still have to market, you still have to advertise, you still have to get yourself out there. You still have to connect with your audience.
3 weeks ago, they started a TikTok account, and their first video garnered 100 views. But after watching this post, an ode to best-selling author James Patterson by a library in Kitchener, they had an idea.
Our thought process behind it was, it's funny and it's cute, and we just want to have a good time.
And it was a good way to show off the building.
1 week ago, in just their second TikTok post, they used some of their dozens of Patterson pen books to illustrate just how prolific he is.
And then it hit 3,000, and then it hit 5,000, and then it hit 10,000, and then it hit 50,000. And just in 2 days, I think it was 48 hours, right before midnight, it hit 1 million.
You absolutely, positively will not put this novel down.
Unbeknownst to them, their video was reposted on Twitter.
You know, the king of publishing himself, or his team, at least.
He is the publishing industry.
Yes, saw the video.
Giving credit where it's due, the women gave a shout out to Des Moines, Iowa library clerk Sharon Feld, who posted the original audio on Halloween of last year.
Listen, I figured it out. There are no other authors.
As for the evolving role libraries play in our lives, Bellows and Wilson want to remind you the Whitby Library and others are open for business.
Andrea Case, CTV News.
All right, what's the read on that weather, Michelle?
Well, we are looking at continued heat and humidity as we get into the rest of the day and also through the evening and through the week. Also, we are looking at the possibility of showers and storms as we get into tomorrow. We should hold off from that for the most part in the overnight. 21 degrees, though, in the overnight. Could see some showers around the 8 o'clock hour if you're in the Greater Toronto area. Tomorrow, we are looking at a high of 28 degrees, feeling like 36. So still some instability there as the rest remnants of Fred pass to our northeast. We could see some showers and storms from that. It's going to be a hot day tomorrow and hot through the rest of the week, trending a bit above seasonal, but more sunshine as we get closer to the weekend. So not a bad forecast in sight. Back to you.
All right, good to know. Thanks, Michelle. Be sure to join Zoraida Altman later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 tonight with Reshmi Nair and Lena Latifat begins momentarily on CP24.
For Michelle Jobin and all of us at CTV News, have a good night.
Good night.